Affairs Update to keep you connected to our mission of advancing equity through empowerment of children, adults, and families of Russell and other West Louisville neighborhoods. Spend the next hour tuned in right here. Get the latest news of family services, community opportunities, businesses, and economic development, and much more. Hear from our leaders and special guests. Call in to be a part of this history-making broadcast. Join LCCC's movement to create vibrant neighborhood conditions for children, for adults, and businesses to thrive socially, academically, artistically, and economically. This is the next episode of Russell on the Move with your host, Kevin Fields. Leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.
Good morning and welcome back to Russell on the Move and Happy New Year as well. This is Kevin Fields, CEO at LCCC, and I want to welcome you to our first broadcast for the new year 2024. I pray that our listening audience has had a great holiday season and is ready to go for the new year. I know we're excited and ready to rock and roll. I do want to take just a moment as we get into today's show to just a moment of reflection as we closed out 2023, which was a great year for us at LCCC. A lot of impact, a lot of work done in all of our three program areas, as well as our community engagement work. You'll be hearing more about all of that as we get more into the year. But as we were closing the year, we did have some anxieties around a series of deaths in the LCCC family. So I'm going to take a moment to acknowledge them, beginning with Ben Ruiz, our dear colleague and associate who was a part of our VISTA staff, who was a big loss for us because for as long as I've been at LCCC, he's been a part of our organization, working in behind the scenes as our advertising guru and graphic design artist. He and his wife, Sonia, who make a great team. We're certainly sad to lose Ben. And also want to acknowledge the passing of Sister Carolyn Easton, who is the sister of our comptroller and dear colleague at LCCC, Trina Tinsley. And we're certainly saddened. I know the family is saddened, but Carolyn had a beautiful home going, and we were blessed to be there as a part of that. And then thirdly, our producer, who helps organize our show, Destiny Chandler, who leads our VISTA team, lost her grandmother. And that all happened in the final days of 2023, and we certainly pray for the families respectively, and we'll continue to mourn as well. So we're going to move right into our show. We had a great show the last time we were on the air in 2023, featuring Vincel Anthony and Carl Brazley talking about minority business inclusion around the construction work that goes on in our community. If you missed that show, you can find the podcast out on our website. Go out to lcccnews.org. You will be enriched by that. There's a lot of great work being done by the 7 p.m. group and others, One West included, and others advancing equity around minority inclusion in the billions of dollars of construction work, major construction projects that are going on in this local market, and you don't want to miss out on getting the intel and the insights behind that. You know, I've had a great break during the holiday season, spending more time at home with my wife and family, and just trying to get caught up on some other parts of life. But I've also, during that time, been on a research binge. Herbert, I want to acknowledge Herbert Johnson is in the studio with us, a co-host. Herbert, I've been on a kind of a AI binge, and that, you know, led us to this conversation today with AI, augmented intelligence. I'm going to use that form of it. You know, it's commonly known as artificial intelligence, right. But I like the augmented component. And I tell you, it is a phenomenon that I thought we needed to start our new year talking about. Because change is happening at a rapid rate throughout the universe, and certainly on the planet Earth, and certainly here in the United States of America. We've got a lot of change happening around technology. This movement of artificial intelligence is upon us, and it's changing the paradigm of society as we know it. Every business and industry will be impacted in one way or another. And so as we continue to talk about advancing equity, today's broadcast, we want to talk about advancing equity via the emergence of artificial or augmented technology. So we're just really honored to have some of our nation's premier experts on today's show. And I'm excited to introduce Eddie Tinsley, who's with Google. He's in the studio with us. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Excited. And then on the line with us, we have a dear friend and colleague, Dr. Sharon Carrick, who's with the University of Louisville Center for Digital Transformation. Good morning, Dr. Carrick.
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to be on this broadcast. We want to begin to delve into this conversation around artificial or augmented technology or intelligence. It goes by many, many names. I'm learning a lot, you know, machine learning and deep learning. And I mean, you guys can explain it better than me as experts, but I'm just enthralled about it. And so we want to talk today about what's in store and how we can make sure our community that we serve is in tune, because, you know, there's an opportunity for this new innovative movement that's underway to help us, to lift us up, to lift up boats, as they say. But there's also an opportunity for people to at least feel like they're being infringed upon or being harmed in some way. So we want to explore that topic of, you know, does it help us or hurt us? So let's just start with some introductions here. Start with you, Eddie, and you're in the studio with us. If you don't mind, give our listening audience a little bit of information about you professionally as well as personally. I do want to acknowledge Eddie. He is a board member, a member of the board of directors of LCCC. So honored to have him here as a part of our board, and has been a leader in our organization for about the last 10 years, working in support as a volunteer of our youth programs. But Eddie, if you don't mind, give a broader definition and introduction of yourself.
All right. So first of all, thank you, Kevin. I'm really, really honored to be here and appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. I currently work at Google Cloud as an engineer, and my primary focus is on guiding large enterprises through leveraging machine learning, artificial intelligence, and things of that nature to transform their business. Been in the industry for over 25 years now, surprising to say and hear that number, but it's been a while now. Working as a software engineer, and as a data professional, and more recently, venturing into machine learning and AI over the past 5 to 7 years or so.
Yeah, well, that's awesome, Eddie. And we're going to learn more about your work at Google. Google has been leading the way as certainly a market leader in technology for a while. And I know that they partner with Dr. Carrick and her work, and so does many other major tech companies. But Dr. Carrick, if you don't mind giving a quick introduction of yourself.
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for having me join in. I appreciate it. Dr. Sharon Carrick, University of Louisville. I'm Assistant Vice President for our Digital Transformation Center. And I've been at U of L for over 20 years teaching business, entrepreneurship, and technology. And then prior to that, owner of a technology company that did software development, integration, as well as piloted a lot of different languages and things in the technology field. So I don't want to dwarf Eddie's, but before Eddie was born, I guess, so I've got about 40 years experience, but it, you know, that part doesn't even matter. And it's something I'm excited to talk about when I say it doesn't matter. It's really anybody can jump in now and learn and use artificial intelligence. And it doesn't matter if you've been somebody long-term or short-term in technology or no-term in technology. So lots of opportunities. Thanks, Kevin.
No, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Carrick. And just a quick personal plug on both of you, respectively. Eddie, as I mentioned earlier, has been instrumental in, even before he became a board member of the LCCC, helping us to advance our work, our mission work. And as people, if you know us, you know that most of our energies are focused on children, young people in our community. And Eddie has had a unique role in helping us to advance our ACT prep work, which is a major effort to make sure our children are ready for those college entry exams that help them to get scholarships and so forth. And when I was thinking about it, Eddie, it's been over 10 years since you've been a part of that movement. So on behalf of all the kids that you've touched in our community, I want to take this public opportunity to thank you for that work. Because, and I remember there was a time that I tried to give you a volunteer stipend and you never would take it. And that just says a lot for who you are as a servant leader in our community. And to you, Dr. Carrick, my dear friend of much of that 40-year career, Sharon Carrick Herbert was my, you know, very first computer instructor.
Is that right?
Going back into the 80s.
Right.
When I was, you know, you think about the emergence of technology and how fast that things have changed. You and I went to college, Herbert, and graduated with degrees long before there was a thing called a personal computer.
Right.
So when we got out into the business world, this computer stuff was thrown at us. And I remember working at the Housing Authority, and Dr. Carrick contracted with us there and trained us all on, WordPerfect and Lotus 1-2-3 and just the basic stuff. And the world has changed so much, right? And here we're talking about artificial intelligence. So let's get into the conversation. I'd like for both of you to give us your explanation of what is artificial intelligence and how is it changing our economic landscape as a world. Nitty, I'll start with you.
Okay, well, I'll jump in. I said artificial intelligence is really the science of building machines that can simulate human reasoning and perception. It's a relatively old field that's become a lot more popular of late due to advances in generative AI and the ubiquity of new tools like Bard and ChatGPT. So that's a high level. Did you want to get into the economic impact?
Sure, go ahead.
Right. Well, this is a really interesting topic we talk about a lot, and I think of it as analogous to the Industrial Revolution in a way, really in two ways, right? One, in the way in which it's transforming the workforce, and another, similar way in a way, it's kind of transforming the way big businesses and enterprises work, right? So if you talk about the workforce, right, we go back to think about the 19th century when the Industrial Revolution came along, and workers had to move from being kind of craftsmen and artisans to machine operators and factory workers. And what happened is those machines and those factories became and operated as a force multiplier and allowed those individuals to be orders of magnitude more productive, but it fundamentally changed the way that they had to do work. I think AI is coming to a point where it's going to have a very similar impact on the knowledge workers of today, of the 21st century. Right, where today you may do knowledge work and build things and develop, say you're a marketer, you may develop a marketing campaign and marketing collateral and things of that nature on your own, where now with you leveraging AI tools, you may leverage AI tools and be able to do 10, 20, 30 times more. And you'll have to learn how to leverage these tools and how to make use of them. Otherwise, you become, again, orders of magnitude less productive if you aren't able to do that. So I think we're coming to a time where where knowledge workers of today are, where they're working independently, they're going to have to be able to leverage these tools. They may be currently becoming efficient at creating prompts and prompting these AI tools, and in the future, even that may become more automated, where you're just leveraging those tools and editing and responding to the output of those tools. So the second aspect I did want to touch on was how it's transforming big business. So in a similar way, if we go back to the Industrial Revolution, the machines and the factories changed the efficiency at which those businesses were able to transform raw materials and natural resources into tangible product, into productive things that could be used for commerce, what have you. So in a similar vein, this one's a little bit more abstract. I think the underutilized raw materials of today are data, right? So there's a wealth of data. Everything we do leaves behind a digital paper trail that effectively documents the way the world around us works. And artificial intelligence gives us, and particularly large enterprises, an efficient way to mine that data, aggregate that data, organize that data, and ultimately transform it into solutions and insights that have tangible value and tangible economic impact. So again, there's a really big shift, I think, on both levels coming from artificial intelligence.
Yeah, well, that you know, that's a great way to frame it up, and I love the concept of AI being a force multiplier. That's a term I learned from you, Eddie, being a force multiplier. Dr. Kerrick, anything that you can add to that definition and explanation of AI?
Well, I'll take a step back on the simplest level, really thinking about just things that the convergence of kind of human intelligence with machine intelligence, and on a simple level, thinking about things like Siri and Alexa really is a type of artificial intelligence, you know, whereby we're able to utilize the capability of computers to enact, act, perform, you know, duties, responsibilities, and things that, again, we would normally do as a human. So I look at it as, you know, the ultimate shortcut, if you will, of doing less with more, or more with less, if you will, because now we have another tool in our toolkit to be able to execute different kinds of processes in a faster, more efficient way. And I don't know, it's very exciting, even at the basic level of simple chatbots, all the way to quantum computing that's detecting all kinds of different interesting things that can be automated, all the way to healthcare and automating brainwave thoughts to have movement in our bodies or do different things. So I'll stop there, because it really starts to get into that conversation about, you know, the economics and, if you will, the equity, if you will, or enabling the equity across technology for really everyone.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the next focus here, is how this movement can empower underserved communities, or can dampen even the success of underserved communities. Because, you know, it was 23 years ago this month when we were talking about Y2K. And I remember then there was a big concern about the digital divide. And ever since, we've been still trying to close that divide. But now here's another acceleration in technology. So the question is, will the divide get wider? And so I'd like you guys, both of you respectively, to talk about how can this help to promote economic empowerment within underserved communities, such that we don't see a widening of the digital divide and its results. And Sharon, I'll let you go first.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Again, I think, you know, it's important responsibility of each of us in our communities, whatever communities that we live and work and play in, so to speak, to help support and enable others in this venue, if you will. And I've been riding that wave of digital divide, and I hate to say that, you know, we're still not there 23 years later. You know, there's still pockets of inequities, you know, but that doesn't mean that we should be discouraged. It means that we need to try harder. You know, we can do better, and we can try harder. But kind of back to what I was saying initially in the opening is that I do see it as something that's a platform, because it is free, that is allows opportunity for anyone, you know, even someone who's the most sophisticated computer user, really everyone's at kind of the same learning start point, if you will. So it's interesting enough that it's intuitive to capture people's attention and interest and curiosity to write simple things or ask the computer to do simple things, and then magically or you know, behind the scenes, the code is written, and then suddenly we have opportunity with a new work skill that we have maybe never had before. And so I see it as an opportunity for a lot more jobs. People are always saying, well, I think it's make jobs go away. And I'm saying, no, I think that there's going to be more jobs, because our human intuition and learning, you know, the computer and artificial intelligence takes its cues from us. So we still have the innovation in our mind of how we might know how to do a job better. And I know people listening right now, anybody listening, even myself, I always say, gosh, why are we doing this a certain way? We could do this so much better. Well, that's the innovation that we bring to the table, every one of us. And again, to learn AI, just like any other software program, you know, start with the basics and then build your way up. And we can talk about at the end, there's lots of community programs. LCC offers some as well that can help people just to get the basics and learn for free. But again, that innovation and ingenuity that the human spirit brings, you know, will bring it to life, which again, I think will bring opportunity for individuals, entrepreneurs, or people in the workforce to gain a new skill and forging ahead.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. And so, Eddie, Dr. Kirk suggesting that it can create new jobs. And so my question, I'll just tweak it a little bit. If that's the case, how can our underserved community benefit from this new AI economy? And what's the preparation process for that, as you see it?
Yeah, well, to piggyback on what Dr. Kirk was saying, one of the opportunities here, it comes from the democratization of the technology. So tools like Bard, like ChatGPT, things of that nature, are making this technology not only just part of the public discourse, but very accessible, so that you can put your hands on. So, and again, Dr. Kirk touched on it, it's incumbent on us as leaders with organizations and really as individuals to take advantage of that accessibility, right? I think there's a new level of approachability and accessibility to state-of-the-art technology, to be productive, to educate yourself, and to bring forth value, right? And even start businesses, be disruptive, right? So I think we're still, the other opportunity here is with this technology still being relatively early, there's still opportunity for small businesses and innovators to leverage this as a competitive advantage and to disrupt it, to disrupt industries. And then on the back side, right, the not so happy side of this is that if we don't take advantage of this window that's available right now, while the technology is a little bit new and is being integrated, we're going to come from a point where today there's an opportunity for it to be a competitive advantage, and we'll eventually get to a place where leveraging AI in the way that we're discussing becomes table stakes, and a lot of the incumbents will have leveraged AI and their data estate as a moat that potentially
could serve to widen that the digital divide and the wealth gaps that we're trying to close. So the broader point, the key point here is really incumbent for us to just get our hands dirty, jump in, dive in, and don't be afraid to fail. In fact, fail fast, learn, iterate, try again, and figure out ways in which you can be disruptive and be more productive leveraging these tools.
Well, and you know, that's, you know, I want to segue in and talk about challenges, because as we talk about this, you know, we need to be clear, and we probably need to give a disclaimer that this subject is very controversial, and there's different perspectives on it, and there's some people that are flat out scared about it. In fact, I'm reading a book now. One of your Google colleagues, former Google colleagues, Mo Gaudat, wrote a book called Scary Smart. And there's early in that book, Mo talks about things that are inevitable, that are definitely going to happen as it relates to AI. He said one thing for sure is going to happen. It's already happening. And the second thing is, it's going to become smarter than humans. The AI has the potential and will become smarter than humans. And we already see that potential now with the way that it can be a force multiplier, as you say, and get much more done with less effort. And thirdly, he says, there's going to be some mistakes made. And so with that, those things in mind, how do we prepare our community for the challenges? And what do you guys see as some of the potential challenges or risks associated with this AI economy?
I can jump in on this. So earlier I mentioned, right, that everything we do today leaves kind of a digital paper trail, right, that effectively documents the way our world works, right? It's tracking things we do, the way we operate, the way things are responding. So if it documents the way the world works, that means it inherently also documents any systemic biases or inequities that may exist in our world today. So now if you take that a step further, these AI models are being trained on that data, on that digital paper trail. So if it's allowed to go unchecked, these models will also reflect those biases and those inequities and perpetuate them. So one thing Google tries to do a really good job about, and I think also as community leaders, as legislators, different areas of that nature, need to be very vigilant about putting checks in place to ensure that these models are not perpetuating those biases, are not perpetuating those inequities. That won't just happen naturally. If naturally the AI will go the course of the world and the world that it's being trained to reflect, right? So we kind of have to protect ourselves and from the worst aspects of that world that it's learning how to operate from. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. One way I like to look at it, and Dr. Carrick, I want you to comment on the risk and challenges as you see it too. But one of the things I see is computers are programmable, but just like anything that's programmable, even the human mind is programmable. And if you put garbage in it, you're going to get garbage out of it. You know, so the GIGO idea, and so we got to be careful how we use it. And so, anything you want to add to that, the challenges and risks from your standpoint, Dr. Carrick?
No, I think you all beautifully articulated, but it's a sad thing. There's just all that data out there that already has those inherent biases, and so that's going to be our challenge, is to try to somehow detect that. But again, that's where our value as a human comes in, is our ingenuity. You know, A, to be aware of the problem, and then B, to think of other ways to, clean up that data and or figure out how that might work. And I do believe, and it sounds far-fetched, that there is a way to do that potentially using AI. So I think, you know, bias is a huge issue. Privacy and security, you know, again, the tension of, you know, what data can be utilized and in what form or fashion. There's insurance companies talking about right now mining data and then making a determination about, you know, what your insurance pay rates are, as opposed to, you know, kind of giving a generic profile. But if I have a profile of, you know, historic, you know, health issues, you know, that may potentially hit underserved, disabled people, you know, in ways that we didn't really intend for it to impact, from a whole nother financial issue. And, you know, just then the lack of empathy. AI can't feel or interact with the feelings of compassion, you know, of understanding. And so that's going to be another element that we will have to look at or take into consideration as we're writing these models or working within an AI environment, exactly how that is supported, you know, and potentially over-reliance of AI, you know, our critical thinking skills, creativity, you know, is how does I do a homework project right now where I make the students actually use AI, and then I have them compare and contrast to their own paper, you know, what are some of the missing pieces. So in one sense, people can be trained to really think a little bit harder, if you will, a little bit more about something in that thought process. But I also could see that there can be complacency or some over-reliance on AI, and not challenging the status quo and saying, you know, hey, that doesn't really sound quite right, you know, in that effort. So I think those are some of the key elements that we really have to be alert to and that are potentially dangerous for our communities and again, in utilizing AI. Again, I'm an enthusiastic supporter, but, you know, there's bad actors out there, and I know this is a loaded word, capitalist, that then when I think about how they might use AI in their industry, and again, I'm not picking on insurance, it just happens to be on my mind right now, then I think about, wow, you know, someone had, you know, historic in their family or their community of some kind of genetic issue or, you know, preponderance of a certain kind of this, that, the other disease and or affliction. And those insurance companies then, you know, mine that data, you know, in a very detailed way, then that can be potentially impacting underserved communities in a negative way, potentially in the future, too.
Yeah, excellent. You know, our time is flying, and we're going to continue this conversation. We've got another 30 minutes, but we are due a commercial break, and we are going to open the lines at the after the break. The number here is 502-571-1240. We want you to call in with your questions or comments with our guest, Eddie Tinsley from Google, Sharon Carrick from University of Louisville. I know we do have a call on the line. If you don't mind holding, we're going to take a very short break, and we'll take your call right after the break.
It's official. The Old Walnut Street Plaza Business Intelligence Center, powered by LCCC and Woodforest National Bank, have partnered to launch its second Entrepreneurship for All cohort. The last time we offered this program, we had an influx of entrepreneurs interested in participating, and 16 of them are better off than where they started by utilizing the resources, mentorship, and the network of like-minded individuals to help them grow as an entrepreneur. Are you looking to launch a business or move your business forward? If you answer yes, then you may be a good fit for the E4ALL powerful program that empowers dreamers and transforms them into entrepreneurs. If you have an idea, a hobby looking to make money, or looking to grow an existing business or nonprofit, the E4ALL program works with individuals from a wide range of industries. This accelerator program is slated to start with the E4ALL kickoff event this January 23rd, 2024 from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's free to attend. And you know what? A business plan is not required. Do not miss this opportunity again. contact me, Zyberia Perrier, Manager of Adult and Special Population Services at 502-583-8821 or by email at zperrier@lcccnews.org.
Louisville Central Community Centers is celebrating 75 years of service to the community. LCCC is officially announcing the 75-year challenge and pledge. Join in the celebration and pledge your support by donating $75 today. Your donation goes directly to support the families we serve daily. Mail your donations to LCCC, 1300 West Muhammad Ali, 40203. Call 502-853-8821 or log on to LCCCNews.org.
Are you ready to make a real impact in your community? Look no further than AmeriCorps Vista's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project at LCCC. Become a Vista Community Impact Ambassador. Become a catalyst for positive change. Picture yourself working hand-in-hand with local leaders, organizations, and residents to empower the Russell neighborhood. As a Vista volunteer, you'll play a vital role in creating lasting solutions to address poverty and inequality. Your dedication will help build a stronger, more vibrant community for everyone. Make a difference, make connections, and make memories that will last a lifetime. Join the AmeriCorps Vista team at LCCC's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project today. Visit our website at lcccnews.org. to learn more and apply. Be the change you want to see in the world. Become a AmeriCorps Vista Community Impact Ambassador, where your passions meet action.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Fields, and we're going to continue the conversation talking about artificial or augmented intelligence, a new phenomenon that has swept the world, and we're mired in the conversation with leaders in that space, Eddie Tinsley with Google, Dr. Sharon Carrick with University of Louisville. Our lines are open. The number here is 502-571-1240. You can call in with your questions or comments as we continue this discussion. We do have a caller on the line, I understand. And call if you would. Give me your name and question or comment, please.
So I am Harper Fernio. My question is, so from an let me digress for 5 seconds. I am an AI brand specialist at IBM, and I obviously love this conversation around AI advocate. So from an enterprise perspective, which is what, you know, I work with on a day-to-day, ethics and transparency and explainability, you know, essentially known as AI governance, is always top of mind whenever you're considering the implementation of AI. However, from a consumer perspective, and to your knowledge, what ethical considerations and safeguards are in place to prevent the misuses of AI technology?
That's an excellent question, Harper, and thank you so much for calling in. You guys want to take that?
Yeah.
What protections do we have to make sure that this is used in an ethical way?
So one of the areas that's gotten a lot of attention lately is protecting the rights of creators and digital creators and writers who have their content on the internet, and it's part of how they live, is by receiving payment for that content. So there's a lot of concern around if that content is just being regurgitated by ChatGPT, by Bard, then does that effectively disenfranchise those people, that section of the economy? So I can speak to the models that Google releases publicly have citation checks to ensure if the model returns an answer that is verbatim, it includes too much of of another source verbatim, or relies too much on a singular source, then that response is not returned to the user. It's effectively suppressed. In the enterprise context, similarly, to it may not suppress those answers because the enterprise owns that data, but what it does and what it allows it to do is have citations similar to how you would in a research paper, right? To let you know, hey, here are the sources from which I obtained that data, so that you can fact check it, understand where it's coming from, understand if it's reputable. But again, to go back to our earlier conversation about what we can do, I do think it is important for organizations like LC3, community activists, things of that nature, to educate themselves so that we can be vigilant about advocating for transparency, not only in how the models are trained, but also in which context in which they're being used and how they're being used, right? So it kind of goes back to what Dr. Carrick was saying around how are these things being used in insurance, and are there HIPAA violations being put into place, right? There's a certain aspect of this where we have to be vigilant in protecting and safeguarding and advocating for that transparency that's necessary to ensure equity and just safe use of this technology.
Well, I was just going to say, I was going to come to you, Dr. Carrick, because on this question that Harper raises about ethics, I know the one place that's really being looked at closely is higher education and education in general. So I would like you to comment on this. How do we manage the ethics in academia? Because plagiarism, you know, to Eddie's point about people using other people's content, is a real concern, I know, to educators. So you want to take that one?
Sure, yeah. When we think about, you know, the ethics, I also think about the other side of the opportunity, really, is that we are teaching students that are studying to be data scientists. Well, actually, we have embedded AI courses all throughout every single discipline at U of L. So nursing students take AI and music students take AI. And along with that, you know, we propose the challenge, you know, to our great thinkers, minds that are being developed, which are our students. We ask them this question is, you know, what are some ways that, you know, we can have that preventative look? So just as Google engineers and IBM engineers are, you know, creating risk mitigation type of algorithms, you know, to Eddie's point, you know, that looks at patterns and different things like that, you know, that's what we're challenging our students to actually come up with those kinds of remediation. So that's one part of the answer to the question is, you know, let's look to being opportunist about it and creating these models that can detect. Intel's got some really cool things out even for now. You know, the fakes, all the fakes, voice, so on and so forth, you know, that really can be troubling. Fake pictures, fake voice, you know, imitations and all of that. But again, you know, the young scientists, if you will, when I say, or young innovators are thinking of ways to combat that, and those are really new, novel approaches and opportunities. To speak on the academic side, that's why we try to head on, and I'm not saying every single professor does this, but we have done all kinds of training across campus for all the faculty and staff as well, to look at AI and see how AI actually works. And as I mentioned in one of my homeworks that I have, you know, I encourage the students to use it and then just reference it and show me the difference, you know, of what was produced in, you know, AI, and then what was their actual thinking or critique of that. So they're really having to think about and dissect that. Does it answer all the questions? No. It's going to be a challenge that, you know, we have. I mean, just like bad actors are out there everywhere, cybersecurity, you know. But I always say that should make, you know, the good actors work a little harder to outsmart them, or if you will, outsmart or have a different kind of ingenuity to try to combat that. But I think talking about it, learning and understanding frameworks of risk, and then building models that can interpret and or track these kinds of patterns and things that can surface for us are going to be helpful. And again, it's a building process. It's not going to be solved today. You know, it's going to be something that evolves each day. Thank you.
Well, that was excellent. And again, thank you, Harper, for that question. And because that was on our list of questions too. This idea of making sure that this effort, you know, as we advocate and promote AI as a tool set that can help to empower and enrich our community, and person by person, business by business. We want to make sure that it's done in a legal and ethical way. Eddie, you touched on this too, and I want to come back to this because, you know, we're a community-based nonprofit. We have a mission, and we have a great partnership with U of L and Google, and we're working with Simmons College as well to educate on technology. And I guess I want to hear from you guys on what more can we do, organizations like us, do to help make sure that our community is engaged in AI in a fair and equitable and ethical way.
Again, it may seem as though I'm repeating myself, but I think the key thing here now is education and experimentation. So creating platforms. I spoke earlier about one of the opportunities here being the democratization of this technology, right? The ability for far more, much larger portion of the population than maybe was possible 10, 20 years ago to get their hands on this technology in a meaningful way. So in the same way, and Kevin, we're already talking about how to go about doing this.
Right.
We need to put programs in place to kind of formalize and accelerate that education process and push people to experimentation, push people to think about how to leverage these technologies and put these things into practice. So whatever that looks like, right? But effectively, even if not formally being a incubator, effectively having the community be a incubator for ideas and for businesses and even for ways of advancing advocacy for transparency and equity. But I think at this stage of the game, the foundation is education. But I don't want to say education without experimentation. Don't not just listening, reading books, but getting your hands dirty. And it's okay to fail. Fail fast, iterate, to do something else, and continue. And you'll 9 times out of 10 you'll end up with something of value and much further along than if you didn't actually dive in and try to do something meaningful with the technology.
So it sounds like more of the skill up, change up, badge up work, Dr. Carrick. And I know that's something that is near and dear to you and our partnership. And how's the university looking at this in terms of community based education, as Eddie frames it up, and what do you see on the horizon in the near future?
From our perspective, something new, not new, but just we're trying, is in every community that we have a new program that is training trainers, even if they don't have a college degree, which Kevin knows I didn't have a college degree when I started in technology. I just, you know, as Eddie said, got my hands dirty, started playing with it, and just got intrigued. And so this new program of training community trainers throughout the 26 districts in Louisville, whereby then those trainers train people, but we help support them behind the scenes. So, A, that can be an entrepreneurial endeavor where, you know, they want to go do the training after we've trained them and give them all the materials and modules. And we have a free portal that people can go to get free badges from IBM and Google and Microsoft and the like. But I think it's that multiplier effect. You know, so if we have a community trainer, again, who just has a GED, but they are interested in learning how to do chatbot, well, we can teach them how to do chatbot, and then they train other people. Right now, we do offer them $500 when they train a next group of people on their own, but we're there helping them. And so I think it's just getting people excited about, wow, this, you know, this is really fun and this is really cool. And, you know, roll up your sleeves. And again, as Eddie said, you know, I love that. Just, you know, fail fast. It's okay. ChatGPT just came out in 2022. You know, so even though artificial intelligence has been around for many, many, many years, you know, through the military, you know, right now it's really an exciting time for any person, whether they're changing jobs or advancing their careers or starting their careers, to jump in, because The water's fine, and there's so much opportunity. And again, I think people like LCCC putting on free training things that we can support with you guys and partner with you, you know, as well, is the outreach that we need for our communities. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what we're doing and going to continue to do. And, you know, and Eddie, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk more specifically about what Google is doing, because we've heard about ChatGPT, we've heard about the Gen AI movement that Google is behind. I've heard about this thing called Bard. Can you break those down in simple terms? What does that mean to the average consumer, those kinds of products that are out there? What can they do and how do we reach them?
Okay, so the key technology I focus on is Bard. And effectively, what that does is give you access to what's called a large language model or a foundational model, which this is a model that is effectively trained on a very large corpus of information, right? So it, to oversimplify, we can say it has effectively searched the internet at a point in time and assimilated the knowledge that it was able to gain from that, as well as some other first party data sets that Google owns, right, and has those things there. Now you can go and use that to ask questions and get responses based on that information. So effectively, I say at level one, it gives you a more efficient and robust search experience, right? So in terms of having to put together potentially multiple Google searches and go to the documents, vet out the information and pull that out for yourself, you can go to a tool like Bard or ChatGPT and have a lot of that information aggregated and organized for you and present it to you in a usable format. Now, if you take that a step further, you can go beyond just asking for information and asking for generation, right? Which is kind of the key of generative AI. So we've talked about situations where I had a situation with where my brother was putting together a proposal, right? He's in the very early stages of starting a consultancy, right? So we were putting together a curriculum for an education program that he was putting together, right? We provided Bard with a lot of the background information that we wanted to use, a lot of our intent, a lot of our purposes, and we were able to get out an outline for that curriculum that was probably 80% of what we wanted to do, right? And in a matter of minutes, right? So now, to Dr. Carrick's point, we're elevating the value of the human's time, of our time, by taking that 80% that we got from Bard, right, from the AI tool, and now we're doing higher value tasks in terms of just modifying that, making sure everything is right, and adding our human touch to it. So there's grant writing, even just basic management of your email, because one other thing that's coming that I think people are maybe a little less aware of are the plugins with these tools. So for example, with Bard, it can actually, if you use Gmail and Google Drive, it can leverage that information as well. So it keeps that information private, but it's able to leverage it. So for example, I can ask a question like, hey, do I have any emails? I actually tried this. Do I have any emails from my brother that I haven't answered? It went and literally found the last email that my brother sent me that was not responded to, and I actually asked it to help draft a response thanking him for what he did, and I got it was able to infer a great deal of that information and do that. So you think about just your day-to-day productivity. If you really, again, this is why I stress getting your hands dirty, as you start to get into this, you realize the opportunities for personal, professional, and then from a business perspective, again, using this as a force multiplier to drive productivity, they're really limitless.
Awesome, awesome. You know, not to put you on the spot, but you use the term Bard, and I know that, you know, for those that are listening, that's B-A-R-D. And is that an acronym? What does that stand for, Eddie?
You know what? I have no idea. I have absolutely okay. No idea. But yeah, that's effectively, I think, the two preeminent technologies out are ChatGPT and Bard. So if you're more familiar with ChatGPT, think of Bard as effectively The Google brand.
The Google version.
Yeah, so you can Google it, B-A-R-D, just like you can Google ChatGPT. You know, and I found so many AI apps that I'm integrating into my work. One that I really love is ChatPDF, which will take any PDF document and unpack it for you. You can ask any question of any document, and it will just frame the answer, having read that document and synthesize what you're asking that document to tell you. And I found it to be quite accurate. And so those kinds of productivity tools are really phenomenal. But again, I want to thank you guys. This is awesome. And with any kind of technology, skills, education, we always talk about beginner level, intermediate level, and then advanced level. So we're going to treat this conversation the same on Russell on the Move. Today is an introduction. We're going to do some more things down the road that will be on a higher plane, because as we continue to build on our partnerships with Google and U of L and others, we're going to be doing programs that do exactly that, introduce you, train you, get your skills up to a higher level, and then get you connected to opportunities that you might not even imagine. Because the world is changing so fast, and there is a higher demand for people who can apply these new technologies in a force multiplying way. So we're excited about that. So we just got a few minutes for any closing comments from our special guests, Dr. Sharon Carrick and Eddie Tinsley. Dr. Carrick, I come to you first. Any closing remarks for this conversation?
I'm just proud to have a really strong relationship with Louisville Central Community Center, and, you know, really appreciate your all's outreach, you know, the community in offering programs that are either low cost, no cost, and however we can support that, you know, we're here to do that and get the word out. You know, we're excited about AI, and we're excited about new opportunities for folks. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you. We will be in touch with you and continue this conversation. So thank you so much. Eddie, any closing comments from you?
Yeah, two really quick comments. One, I'll triple down on get your hands dirty. You can go to you. There's really, in today's day and age, no excuse for not educating yourself. If there's something that you want to know, you can go to YouTube, get really in-depth education as you want in a really consumable format. And then go to Bard, go to ChatGPT, go to these tools and put that knowledge in action. The second thing, I do want to highlight a program from Google. There's a Black Founders Digital Accelerator program. It's a 10-week program for early stage startups that provides equity free support, mentorship, cloud, and things of that nature. The application deadline is February 1st. Again, the Black Founders Digital Accelerator from Google. And the application deadline is February 1st for early stage startups who may want mentorship in the areas that we're discussing, as well as credits and effectively credits to leverage the Google Cloud technology to help build your business.
I love hearing that. Just, is there any partnership opportunity for us maybe to be a host site for that with Google through your leadership?
I can definitely look into it and find out.
Yeah, well, let's think about that. I think that's exciting. Herbert, you've heard it, and you've taken all this in. And give us your thoughts as we wrap up today.
My thought is, Kevin, one thing. Education is the vaccine to the community. So I'm really excited about this AI, where it's going at, and all that good stuff. But you said something about our college days. When we started college, nobody knew this but me, that my major was computer science. and we was talking all them programs and Fortran and COBOL, that I can remember those two. It was so confusing to me that, you know, I didn't pursue that. So my point is that based on what Eddie said, get your hands dirty, because it's the way of the future, man. And, you know, I appreciate what LCCC is doing around, you know, just bringing that knowledge to the community. So with that, you know, have a great day.
Yeah, thank you. And as we close this week's show, we will continue this conversation in future shows. But next week's show, we'll be here to talk about the kickoff of the Wood Forest Foundry. We have a kickoff event scheduled for January 23rd. Siberia Pierre and Robert Byers are teaming up, that's Wood Forest and LCCC teaming up to bring a 12-week entrepreneurial training course that does kick off in early February. So the kickoff event is on the 23rd. You'll be hearing more about that. And then just keep us in mind, we are in our 75th year. We are planning a major 75-year anniversary celebration for March 21st, and we're still on this campaign. Support our mission. Go out to our website, donate, lcccnews.org. Hit the donate button and make that work for us. But we've had a great show, great kickoff to the new year. Again, thank our guests. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you, Dr. Carrick. And we're going to continue this movement throughout 2024. I'm really excited about 2024 and what it promises. But until next week, we want you to stay safe and be blessed, and God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Russell on the Move, LCCC's weekly affairs update on Russell and surrounding neighborhoods in West Louisville. We hope you enjoyed our show and took away news you can use to help lift your spirits and increase your prosperity. Join us next week as we continue our mission, equity advancement and community empowerment. For now, be safe, be blessed. Until we meet again, the LCCC. Leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.